Okay, so y'all ready to get started? So here we are in chapter 6. Chapter 6 is on consumer choice and demand, right? This is Econ 202, consumer choice and demand. And the first slide is, in our analysis of consumer choice, what important assumptions do we make? People would rather have more than less. Now, a good part of this is a review, or at least we're using some of the concepts, the principles that we learned in earlier chapters. Of course, you know, in economics, there's only a handful of principles. It's not like you have to learn a whole lot of new things all the time. As long as you understand the basics and the principles, and then the vocabulary, and use your own common sense reasoning. So you'll see what I mean as we go through this chapter. But the point that this slide is making is that in our analysis of how the economy works, we're assuming that the economy is made up of economic persons. And an economic person is one who would rather have more than less. That's all. I mean, if I gave you a choice between a $20 bill and a $10 bill, everything else being equal, which would you choose? The 20, see? Now, that you know, this may not be true in all cases, but in our analysis of how the economy works, we're going to assume that that's the way people are. Now, what is a demand curve? You should know this by now. A demand curve shows how many units will be demanded at various prices, right? At various prices. And why do demand curves slope downward and to the right? Because at higher prices, what happens? If price goes up, now true or false? If price goes up, demand goes down. False. And why is that false? Now, why is that false? If price goes up, demand goes down.
People find that substitute.
No. Yes. The answer is quantity demanded. As price goes up, the quantity demanded goes down, but not demand itself. Now, what would have to occur for demand to change? If you were to make a general statement, not to be specific, but what would have to happen for demand to change? We would have to relax the everything else being equal assumption. We would say, well, now, what would happen if something changed other than price? Now, if something changed other than price, then we'll have a whole shift in the curve. Okay? Okay, so with a change in price, what about other things? When price changes, we assume that everything else stays the same. And so a demand curve looks like this. Wow. So, as price goes down, what changes?
Is that the quantity?
Yeah. See, the quantity demanded changes. The quantity demanded changes from Q1 to Q2, right? Mm-hmm. But when price went down from P1 to P2, did anyone see the demand change?
From P1 to P2?
No. Well, yeah. But demand didn't change.
Yeah.
See, that curve... That blue curve didn't change, did it? That blue line there, that downward slope and demand curve didn't change a bit. Okay. Now, what is the difference between wants and demand? We live in a world of unlimited wants, but the things that you demand are those things you are able and willing to buy. So in other words, what this is saying is that the demand curve is not a wish list situation. It's the demand curve shows us how many units people will demand at various prices. But when we say demand, that means that they are willing and able to buy. Willing means I want to, and able says I've got the money. Right? So far it's just a review of basic demand concepts. Now, what is the difference between money income and real income? When you see the word real in front of something, what does that mean? Huh? No. What's the difference between money income and real income? If your income, your paycheck increases by 10%, but prices increase by 10%, what's happened to your money income?
Nothing.
No. Your money income goes up by 10%. But your real income
stays the same.
In other words, when you see the real in front of something, it says, okay, we've adjusted this for inflation. Now, the reason that this is important is what determines demand, aggregate demand in our economy? Money incomes or real income? Well, people are going to make decisions based on their real income, right? Not their money income. Because real income is what measures buying power. And buying power ultimately determines demand. All right? So we have to always convert money income to real income when we're talking about aggregate demand. See, your money income increases with a pay raise, but your real income increases only if your pay increases more than inflation. You know, it's like if you put money in a bank and the bank pays you, let's say, 4% interest, but in a year's time, inflation's 4%, then how much have you made on your money in real terms?
Nothing.
See, because when you go back at the end of the year, let's say, and you withdraw your money, while you're in real terms, you're taking out the same amount of money that you put in. So we might say that the money interest, or in this, we would call it nominal, and nominal and money are sometimes interchangeable, those two terms. So we would say that your nominal interest is 4%, but your real interest is zero. Okay, so this is what shows a shift in demand. Now, what can cause a shift in demand like this? What can cause demand to increase from D1 to D2?
Demand to increase?
Yeah.
Increase?
No. What can cause demand to increase? Anybody?
Demand to increase?
Yeah, what can cause demand to increase?
Something.
Yeah, go ahead, say it. Say
something
it.
Other than price.
Something other than price. Now, when we say something like what?
Technology or something?
Well, technology is possible, yeah. A change in technology. What else? What else would shift demand? I mean, now just think about it. Don't rely on your memory. Just use your common sense now. What would cause a? I mean, think of yourself. What would cause your demand to increase or decrease?
Changing wants.
Wants. Changing wants.
Or needs.
What else? Come on now. What's going to affect your demand?
How much money I give?
Well, your now your real income is could change.
So if your real income increases, then yeah. Your demand would increase.
Exactly. If your real income, now demand will, if your real income increases, your demand will increase for some goods, but not for other goods, right?
Right.
If your income increases, and when we say income, we mean real income. There will be an increase in demand for normal goods, but a decrease in demand for inferior goods, right? People may buy more new cars, but they'll probably buy fewer used cars, you see, as their incomes increase. So what else can change demand? I can think of two more reasons. Well, we just said that.
I would be more willing to buy a car if it was a new car if there's a lower price for it.
Yeah, but we're not talking about changing price. We're talking about things other than price. How about a change in...
environment?
Well, environment could be, yeah. That could be.
Are we talking about the factors of the new car?
No, we're talking about... reasons that would cause a shift in demand other than a shift in price. And we already talked about change in income. What do we else we talk about? Tastes and preferences could change. What about your expectations? I mean, if your expectations of what you think is going to happen in the near future, could that affect your decisions of what to buy?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, your expectations can change. And the other thing is the price of related goods or services can change, right?
Like gas and stuff.
Well, if you take any two products that are related, they can be related one of two ways, right? They can be related as far as being complementary goods, meaning that they can go together, like steak and steak sauce, like automobiles and gasoline, right? Or they can be substitutes, right?
Coke and Pepsi, that'd be an excellent example.
Coke and Pepsi would be a great example. So those are related, right? Those are related. So as the price of the related product changes, what happens to the demand for the first product?
Changes.
It's going to change. Now, which way it changes depends on whether the two goods are either related as complements or substitutes. All right?
So, also, would resources change the demand to occur? Like the resources it took to make that product?
Well, no. You're confusing demand and supply now.
Right.
Yeah. Right now we're talking about demand. So anyway, here's a list on the slide 10. Incomes, tastes and preferences, number of consumers. So we failed to mention that one. The more consumers that enter the market, then what? There's a tendency for demand increase, right? The fewer number of people in the market, then there's a tendency for demand to decrease.
Wouldn't that be the tendency for the quantity demanded to decrease?
No. Quantity demanded only changes if price changes. Period. That you got to fix that in your mind. Okay. What are tastes, consumer preferences for different goods and services, and what is utility? Represents the level of satisfaction a consumer derives from consumption. Utility is a word that we use in economics to signify a level of satisfaction. Now, how much is one util worth?
One what?
Util. U-T-I-L.
Is that like a widget?
No, a util is a measurement of a level of satisfaction. Are you highly satisfied or are you just a little bit satisfied? Utility is a measure of one's level of satisfaction.
So how much is one?
So my question was, how much is one util worth?
It all depends.
Yeah, that's a good answer. In other words, no one knows what a UTO is. But here's the point. I know that five UTOs is five times one UTO. Now, I don't know what one UTO is, but I know five is five times one. So in other words, the only way that we use this concept here is to measure the rate of change. See, in economics, what we're most concerned with is the rate of change. See, are things getting better or are things getting worse? Is the rate decreasing? So what we're concerned with is the rate of change, and a UTO is a measurement that will enable us to talk about rates of change. Now you'll see what I mean as we go through this this chapter, but for now, just keep in mind that a UTO is a one unit. It's a measurement of a level of satisfaction. And we just use it to measure things. You know, we do this so often in economics, take the unemployment rate. Now, the unemployment rate last month was 7.6%, or month before last it was 7.6%, and last month it was 8.1%. Now, if you ask me exactly how many people exactly what is 7.6%, and 8.1%, you might have a hard time answering that. But if I say that the unemployment rate in one month is 7.6, and then the next month it's 8.1, does that give you just a general idea of, well, are things getting better or are things getting worse? Now, in this case, things are getting worse, right? From 7.6 to 8.1. Well, how much are they getting worse? Well, I don't know. I mean, if we looked at the unemployment rate for several months, you know, maybe 24 months in a row, and we saw the percent of unemployment. I mean, would we have some idea of looking at these 24, 2 year long, each month unemployment rates? Would we have some idea of what's happening out there? You know, are things getting better or are things getting worse? If they're getting better, how quickly are they getting better? If they're getting worse, how quickly are they getting worse? See, the point is that that absolute number, like, for example, I might say the unemployment rate today is 8.1%. Well, if that's all you knew, that would be worthless information. The only time that these statistics have any use whatsoever is when we can compare it to other time periods. And the same thing with UTOs. So I mean, UTOs just, we don't know exactly, what each one is worth, but we know that, four UTOs is four times what one UTO is. And so we can measure rates of change this way, or at least we can talk about rates of change this way. And that's what we're really interested in, because we want to know, are things getting better or are things getting worse? And if things are getting better, how quickly? If things are getting worse, how quickly? Now, what is total utility?
Total satisfaction.
The total satisfaction a consumer derives from consumption. In other words, let's say that you consume something, and we might say, well, your level of satisfaction from consuming this one unit of this product is 10 UTOs. And then you buy a second unit of the same product. We say, well, now your satisfaction in the second unit is 5 UTOs. Well, what's your total utility so far? 15, you see. You got 10 UTO satisfaction in the first unit, 5 UTO satisfaction on the second unit. Now, what is marginal utility? Now, what does that word margin mean? It's probably the most important concept in all of economics. What does the word margin mean?
two different levels.
Well,
like one is different than the other.
Yeah, it's yeah, exactly right. I mean, margin is a measure of the rate of change, or margin is the means the last unit. Like what would marginal cost be if you owned a business? Exactly. However much it costs for that last unit. What would the marginal revenue be?
However much you get the last unit?
Yeah, however much you get or revenue. What's your revenue on that last unit? See? Always considering the last unit with the margin. And we're going to look at marginal analysis here in this chapter, but you'll see how important it is. But marginal analysis is one of those key fundamental concepts in our tool chest, so to speak, when, you know, tools that we use to analyze the economy. You know, to analyze it, to see, well, what's happening out there? And can we explain what's happening out there? And the marginal analysis is a very important tool that we have to answer these questions. Now, what is the law of diminishing marginal utility? The more of a good consumed per period, the smaller the increase in total utility from consuming one more unit. Now, these slides, by the way, are very brief, this slide would be an example of how brief these slides are. This says the more of a good consumed per period, at least beyond a certain point, to be more clear. I mean, if you consume more and more units, what this is saying is that beyond some point, well, your level of satisfaction on that last unit is going to be less.
Just like the 10 and 5.
Yeah, like the 10 and 5, exactly. Exactly. You know, like if you're the law of diminishing marginal utility, you're got some money in your pocket, several dollar bills, and you're kind of thirsty, and you're thinking of buying a soda pop. Now, this is something I talked about in Chapter 1, just as an example, but here we're going to spend more time on it. Here you are, you're standing in front of a soda pop machine. And you're thinking, should I buy a soda pop or not? Now, you're kind of thirsty, you got several dollars in your pocket. When will you buy a soda pop and when will you not? Exactly. I couldn't have said better myself. Exactly. You stand in front of a soda pop machine. You got two things. The soda pop is behind the machine, right? You got a dollar bill in your hand. So your mind goes, which do I place the greater value on, right? The dollar or the soda pop? If you say in your mind that you would rather have a soda pop than your dollar, what are you going to do? Put the dollar in the machine, buy the soda pop. But if you decide in your mind that you desire the dollar more than the soda pop, what are you going
to
do?
Go to the water fountain.
Exactly right. See? Now, economically, what we would say, I mean, here he is, you know, you're standing in front of a soda pop machine, and economically we would say that you will buy a soda pop if your marginal utility is greater than the price. See, now what does that mean? Well, that means that the satisfaction that you're going to derive from that one soda pop is greater than the satisfaction you would receive by keeping your dollar. So you're willing to give up something of lower value, the dollar, to receive something back of higher value, the soda pop. Now, let's say 10 minutes goes by and you're thinking, should I buy a second soda pop? And here you are again, you stand in front of the soda pop machine. Now, will you or will you not buy a second soda pop?
In order
Depends on what, though?
If you're more satisfied with getting a second set of thoughts or keeping that dialing.
Okay, now how would we say that? You're exactly right. But how would we say that in economic?
The utility is greater than the cost of
than the price. Remember, cost is a business term, so price. So if your marginal utility is greater than the price, you'll buy a second soda pop. Will you buy a third soda pop? Yes, if your marginal utility is greater than the price. Will you buy a fourth soda pop? Yes, if you see what I mean. Now, what point? I mean, here you've already bought and drank down about maybe five soda pops, and you're thinking, should I buy a sixth soda pop? And what might you decide? Yeah, you got to use the bathroom. The sixth soda pop, you say, well, now maybe on the sixth soda pop, your marginal utility is what?
Less than
the price. So you say, no, I'm not going to buy the sixth soda pop. So how many soda pops did you buy? Five. You maximized your level of satisfaction by buying five soda pops.
That's your total utility.
Because with each soda pop you bought, your total utility is the highest there. And
so would that be five, or wouldn't the total utility, since you're more satisfied with the first soda pop?
Well, now that was my next. That was really my next point. My next point, see this slide here is what is the law of diminishing marginal utility, and so my next point was, how much satisfaction do you get on the first soda pop? How much in the second? How much in the third? How much in the fourth? Well, in each of those up to five, your satisfaction is greater than the dollar, right? But your satisfaction on the fourth soda pop or the fifth soda pop certainly was less than the satisfaction on the first soda pop, right? And that's what's called the law of diminishing marginal utility. Diminishing marginal utility says beyond some point. See, this law may not apply starting from zero, but beyond some point, as you consume more units of a product, then your satisfaction on each unit becomes less and less and less. Okay? And that's just, this is just, the way people are. And so much of economics is just, let's try to understand and explain how people are. And that's all we're doing here. Okay? So here we have a table that really shows us this. It shows us that we're consuming units of water here, maybe glasses of water, and you see that our marginal utility on the first glass of water is 40 utils, on the second glass of water it's 20 utils, on the third glass of water it's 10 utils, in the fourth it's 5 utils. And on the fifth, it would be negative. That would say, you're actually worse off here than you had to really struggle to drink that fifth glass of water. So, we see your total utility, of course, goes up to a point, and then on the fifth unit, your total utility goes down. Total utility would. Your satisfaction on the first unit, the second unit, third unit, fourth unit, and then on the fifth unit, you had it's a negative number. And this here shows your total utility, for first unit, second unit, and you can see that it goes down. So this is just the same thing as the previous slide. It's just shown in a different way. And this shows your marginal utility. See, now this illustrates the law of diminishing returns. It shows that, your satisfaction on that last unit becomes less and less. Okay, so total and marginal utility from food, units of food consumed, total utility of food. Now, here is something that we are going to use a lot in this semester. You see here at the second unit, marginal utility is 16. How did we get 16 for our marginal utility as we went from one unit to two units? Well, how do we know? But how do we know that? How do we know that our marginal utility on the second unit is 16? Given with the facts that are given to you on this table. See, a lot of...
Is that a surprise for them? Because 49 is 16 greater than 25?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. The answer is 41 minus 25 equals 16. So what we say is that your total utility at one unit is 25, according to this table. And your total utility at two units is 41, according to this table. So, how much did you add your total utility as you went from one unit to two units? 16. Now, a good part of this semester is going to be your ability to read tables and graphs. All right? It's going to be different than macroeconomics. There's, you know, microeconomics here, we got more more mathematics, more graphs and charts and things like that. Now, on a test, you're going to be presented certain tables or graphs, and then you can be asked questions based on that table or graph. So can you take what you've learned and can you look at that table or graph and come up with the answer? All right? So that's going to be... you're going to get some of this on this next test. But after this next test, once we get into price output determination, which is like four chapters, I think maybe even five chapters, we're going to do this a whole lot by, reading graphs and tables, especially graphs. But we use both. In this case, we're using the table. And now, how do we know that marginal utility on the third unit is 12? Because 53 minus 41 is 12, right? And our total utility at two units is 41. Our total utility at three units is 53. So how much do we add to our total utility by consuming the third unit? 12. 12 utils, we say. Now, what we're doing here in the fourth column is that we're this is marginal utility of food per dollar expended. So we're saying, okay, the price is $4, so we're going to multiply our values here. We'll get more experience with this. Like in this case, how do we get 6 1/4 at one unit? 25 divided by 4, 6 1/4, yeah. In other words, our marginal utility of food is 25, but the price we paid is 4, and so our marginal utility on a per dollar basis is 6 1/4. Total and marginal utility from clothing, well, this is the same thing as the previous, but the numbers are different because we're simply showing clothing here instead of food. But as you can see here, that as we consume more and more, what is happening to our marginal utility with each unit? Well, marginal utility at one unit is 20. Marginal utility at two units is 14. Three units is 10. Four units, 6. Five units, 4. See, what does that illustrate? What that illustrates is the law of diminishing marginal returns. Right? The law of diminishing marginal returns. Okay, so everything else is the same here. For time's sake, I'm just going to move on. Now, what is consumer equilibrium? Now, what does that word equilibrium mean? Well, Now, there's a difference between a question, where is the equilibrium at, and what is the equilibrium? Now, what is the concept, in one word, what is the concept of the equilibrium? Because, in the world, in life, there are thousands of equilibriums. I could spend all day talking about just equilibrium, giving you different examples of equilibriums. But what is the concept of the equilibrium?
Like a median?
Well, not exactly. What's that one word I'm looking for? That doesn't quite cut it. What is that?
Tendency.
Yes, that's the word I'm looking for. The word I'm looking for is tendency. Yes, exactly right. See, like the equilibrium price is what? The equilibrium price is the price toward which the economy tends, right? Remember we talked about demand and supply. We got downward sloping demand curve and a positive slope supply curve. And if I say, well, where is the equilibrium at? Where would the equilibrium price be at? All right, you got downward sloping demand curve. Let's say it's aggregate supply, aggregate demand, and we're talking about the general price level. Now, where is the equilibrium price? Come on now, where? Not what, but where. Where is the equilibrium price? Aggregate demand, aggregate supply. Come on now. This is easy. Where they meet. Where they cross, right? You got aggregate demand, aggregate supply, demand curve, supply curve. Where they cross, where they meet, is where the equilibrium is at. Now, why is that an equilibrium?
Well, people would have the tendency to not.
But how did you prove that? Now, again, this is just common sense. If you're trying to prove that a certain point is the point toward which the economy tends, how would you prove that? Well, you would be a little more specific. All right, here's a point that I'm trying to prove is an equilibrium. Now, if equilibrium means a tendency toward, how would I prove that?
You'd have to show that it goes toward that point.
Yeah, you'd have to move away from that point, right? And then observe what happens. If you move away from it, and then there's a natural tendency for events to happen and for the economy to tend back toward that point, then you've proven that that point is an equilibrium. Like if you're talking about the general price level, if you got aggregate demand and aggregate supply, and then where they meet is the equilibrium price, well, if you go above that equilibrium price, what happens? But what happens, though? I mean, why are we out of equilibrium? But why? Now, as the price goes up, what do demanders say to themselves? Well, not stop, but buy less anyway, right? You know, demanders say, we don't want as much at these higher prices. But what do suppliers say to themselves? Yeah, well, we want to supply more because we can make more money at the higher prices than at the lower prices, right? Well, with demanders saying we don't want to buy as much, and suppliers saying we want to supply more, what results?
Quantity demand.
A surplus results. And how do we get rid of the surplus?
Lower the price.
Lower the price. Now, if you go below the equilibrium, see, as price goes down, what do demanders say to themselves?
Buy more.
Hey, we want to buy more. But what do suppliers say to themselves?
Produce less.
Yeah, produce less. We don't want to supply as much. Well, if demanders saying we don't want to buy as much, but suppliers saying, am I doing this right? No, what demander is saying, yeah, we don't want to buy as much. Am I saying this right? No, yeah, the other way. As the price, now see, I got to think about it. As price goes down, demanders are going to say, we want to buy more, right? And suppliers are going to say,
supply less.
Well, demander is saying, we want to buy more, and supplier is saying, we want to supply less, what results?
When you say they supply less, are they doing that for when the prices go up again?
But what's going to cause the price to go up? If demanders are saying, we don't want to buy as much, and supplier... No, I'm sorry. Here I go again. If demanders are saying, we want to buy more, and supplier is saying, we don't want to supply as much, see, demand is saying we want more. Supplier is saying we want to supply less. A shortage. Now, in a free market, how do we decide who gets if there's a shortage? So, how do we decide who gets?
Whoever wants it the most.
And it takes both. Want. Yeah, see, it takes want and the money, right? Those who want it the most, those who got the money to pay for it, they get. Everyone else doesn't get. In other words, it's like in an auction, people bid against one another, and they bid prices up. So we've proven that where that price that exists, where quantity demand equals quantity supplied, is an equilibrium price by moving above that price and showing that price will go down, and then moving below that price and showing that price will go up. Now, here we were talking about, here's a downward sloping aggregate demand curve, upper sloping aggregate supply curve. Where they meet, we've just proven, is the equilibrium price. In reality, over a period of time, what is happening to these demand and supply curves? Well, either up or down. In other words, once you put time into the situation, you're going to have change, right? Change is inevitable. Change is a part of life, all right? So when things change, that change is going to affect either demand or supply, right? So these curves, over time, they might shift to the right or they might shift to the left. Well, every time these curves shift to the right or shift to the left, what happens to the equilibrium price?
It changes,
you see. Exactly. Okay, so what is consumer equilibrium? Well, consumer equilibrium, this is the same concept. Now, if you're talking about consumers and equilibrium, and you're talking about margin, utility, and price, at what point are we tending toward? Come on now, we're talking about a consumer. We just talked about what margin utility is, and we talked about price, and we talked about buying a soda pop in a machine, and when you'd buy a soda pop, and when you would not. Well, if you put in here the concept of the equilibrium, where is the equilibrium? Where is that point that we're tending toward?
Where the two rates would meet.
Where are the two now? You're right, but what are the two? Think about the soda pop machine. The two things that you were... What were the two things that you considered in your mind to decide to buy or not? Marginal utility. Now, marginal cost would apply in another circumstance, but here we're talking about a consumer buying something, so we're talking about utility. So you're talking about marginal utility and... Well, and again, cost would be a business term. So in this case, we're talking about price. So your thinking is right, but you got to get the terminology right. So the two things that we're considering here is marginal utility and price, right? Now, the equilibrium is where marginal utility equals price. How do we prove that is where the equilibrium is at? Now, we can go away from it either in two ways, right? Mm-hmm. So let's go one way. If marginal utility is greater than the price, what are you going to do? Come on now. If marginal utility is greater than the price, what are you going to do? No. Come on now. We're talking about buying soda pops. Each unit, each can at a time. If in your mind you decide that your marginal utility is greater than the price, what are you going to do? Buy that last can, right? Okay, on the next can, if marginal utility is greater than the price, what are you going to do? Buy that second can. Okay, and on the third can, you decide that your marginal utility is greater than the price, what are you going to do? Buy the third can. On the fourth can, you decide that your marginal utility is less than the price, what are you going to do? Not buy that fourth can, right? So if you're going to continue buying units as long as your marginal utility is greater than the price, and you don't buy that unit where marginal utility is less than the price, then at what point are you tending toward where they're equal, where marginal utility equals price? Now, what is the chances that your marginal utility will exactly equal price? Like, take these soda pops. Okay, I'll buy the first one because my marginal utility is greater than price. I'll buy a second one because MU is greater than P. I'll buy a third one because MU is greater than P. Now, what is the chance that on a whole unit, your marginal utility is going to exactly equal the price? Slim to none. I mean, it could happen. I mean, you could decide in your mind that, well, it really doesn't make any difference. I'm placing the equal value on one or the other. But most of the time, what's going to happen is that your marginal utility will be greater than price, marginally greater than price, and then all of a sudden, at a whole unit, your marginal utility is going to be less than the price. So your marginal utility would never equal price, correct? But yet, what point are you tending toward? We can still say that you're tending toward the point where your marginal utility equals price, because that is an equilibrium. It's a tendency toward, you see. And how do we prove that? Well, we went one way and then we went the other way, right? We went one way and we said, well, we'll buy more. We went the other way. We said, well, we're not going to buy that last unit. So we have shown that we are tending toward a point where marginal utility equals price. That is an equilibrium. See, if you are hungry, how much food will you eat? Up to the point where your marginal utility equals price. Now, again, you may never, we're talking about units here, so your marginal utility may never exactly equal price, but that is an equilibrium. That is the point that you're tending toward. Now, how do you know? I mean, if you're talking about consumer and consumer satisfaction here, how do you know when you are maximizing your total utility? I mean, how would you explain to me what would the situation be whereby we could say, yes, you are maximizing your total utility? What would be a possible answer to that question? Well, a possible answer would be you are maximizing your total utility if you did anything differently and your total utility went down. Now, isn't that a definite answer to a definite question? When are you maximizing your total utility? You're maximizing total utility if you did anything different and your total utility went down. Okay? See, okay, now I've explained why here. I get ahead of myself. I can't follow these slides exactly right, but this slide here, slide 23, just explains why margin utility equals price is the equilibrium. And when is your total utility maximized? Slide 24, when your budget is completely spent and the last dollar spent on each good yields the same margin utility. Well, that's the another way of explaining what I just explained about maximizing your total utility. It's just a different way of explaining it. When your budget is completely spent and the last dollar spent on each good yields the same margin utility. In other words, if you did anything different, your total utility would go down. I like my explanation better. Now, why does margin utility equals price explain the downward slope and demand curve? Well, now what we're going to do is that we're going to use this concept of margin utility to explain why demand curves have a negative slope. Now, what this says is here we got a demand curve, and at $4, we're saying that 3 units will be purchased, and at $3, 4 units will be purchased. So you know, why would a person decide to buy at let's say, at $4? In other words, if you're going to buy something as the price goes up, what would have to happen? In other words, if the price goes up and we would say that you would buy more, what would have to happen? Exactly. You're really good at this. Exactly. See, if you're going to buy more at higher prices, that would mean that your margin utility would have to increase, right? Because remember, you're only going to buy if your margin utility is greater than the price. So if price goes up, if you were going to buy more, then your margin utility would have to go up. Otherwise, you would say, no, I'm not going to buy that because my margin utility is less than the price. So this is the connection between margin utility and price. Okay, what is marginal valuation? The dollar value of the margin utility derived from consuming each additional unit of a good. The dollar value of margin utility. What marginal valuation is simply taking the concept of margin utility and putting a dollar value on it based on the price of whatever it is that we're consuming. Now remember here, we're talking about consuming, we're talking about utility. All these are consumer terms. We're talking about price, consumer, utility. See, we're talking about demand here, but not only are we talking about demand, but we're talking about the consumer. See, the consumer, in terms of buying goods and services. Now, what is consumer surplus? The difference between the maximum amount a consumer is willing to pay and what the consumer actually pays. Now, here's the concept of consumer surplus. And like so much, I have to give you just an example of consumer surplus in order that you can understand it. I remember once I went into a store to buy a hat. And I found a hat that I was looking for. And the price was, I forget what the price was, but let's say it was $25. And I said, I've been looking for a hat just like this. And I really need this hat. And I'm willing to pay $25 for it. So I took it to the cash register, and when she rang it up, lo and behold, the price was only $15. See, it was on sale or something, but it wasn't marked on the hat itself. So I paid $15 for this hat. Now, what is my consumer surplus? $10. See, I was willing to pay $25. I mean, there I was standing at the cash register, cash in hand, willing to pay $25, but I didn't pay $25. I only paid $15. So that $10 is what we call consumer surplus. See, it's a term. You know, so much of economics is a terminology. You know, that's why you can buy, you know, a whole dictionary just on economic terms, because you know we analyze things, but then we put labels on things that we talk about or things that we measure. And so here we're putting a label on something that we're measuring. We're measuring the difference between what you're willing to pay for something and what you actually pay for something. And then we're putting a label on that. You know, we're inventing a name and we're calling that consumer surplus. So what is the consumer surplus of buying a pizza? The value of the total utility you receive from consuming the pizza minus your total spending on the pizza. Well, there's a picture of this coming up, and the picture looks like this. And, you know, what this is saying, this shows us we got a downward sloping demand curve here for pizza. And we're saying that at $6, one pizza will be sold. You know, some will say, oh, I'm willing to buy. One person is saying, I'm willing to pay $6. But then if the price goes down to $5, there's two people who say, well, I'm willing to pay $5 for this pizza. Now, of those two people, who's one of them? Now, you want me to say it again? If the price was $6, someone would say, all right, I'm willing to buy this pizza. One person, I'm willing to buy this pizza. But then the price goes down to $5. And at $5, two people say, I want to buy this pizza. Now, who's one of those people? No, but who? Who? Which consumer? Who is that person? Who is one of these people? You want me to say it again? Price of pizza, we're going to say, what if the price of pizza was $6? And we're saying, well, if the price was $6, someone's going to say, I want to buy a pizza. All right, now what if instead the price were $5? And we say, well, at $5, two people are going to say, I want to buy a pizza. Well, who's one of those people? Want me to say it again? The price, we'll say, is $6. Someone says, I want to pay $6 for this pizza. Now, what if instead of $6, the price were $5, and at $5, we say there's two people that say, I want to buy this pizza. Well, who's one of those people?
One of the people that would buy
it at $6. Yes, exactly. One of those people is the guy who said, I'm willing to pay $6 for the pizza. You see what I mean? Now, for that person. Now, not for both these people, because one of these people said, I'm not going to pay $6, but I'll pay $5. But one of those persons says, well, I was willing to pay $6. What's the consumer surplus for that for that person?
A dollar.
Right? They said, well, I was willing to pay six, but I only paid five, so consumer surplus is $1 for that person. See, not for both these people, but for that person that's willing to pay six, that person's now got a consumer surplus of $1 because they only paid $5 for the pizza instead of six. Now what happens if we lower the price to $4? At $4, we say, well, three people are willing to pay buy pizza. Yeah, one of those people now has a consumer surplus of what?
$2.
And one of those people have a consumer surplus of $1. And then third person has no consumer surplus. You see how this works? And this concept here is an explanation of why demand curves have a negative slope. And whatever the price is now here, price we say is P. How do we know the price is P? Because what's not shown to us here? We're saying the price is P, but in a free market, how would P be derived? Where is the equilibrium price? Well, what things? No. No. Come on now, what determines equilibrium? What determines the market price of anything? Demand and supply, right? The market is demand and supply. So in other words, what's left out in this diagram is the supply curve. But the supply curve, if there was a supply curve here, it would be, you know, where price is at. So I mean, in other words, the intersection of the demand curve and supply curve would be P, because we're saying, well, this is the price. Well, how do we know this is the price? Because this is the equilibrium price. It's the market price. Just remember, the equilibrium price determines the market price, even though they're not one and the same at any one point in time. The equilibrium price determines the market price. Well, the area above this price, all the way up until your demand curve intersects with your vertical axis, this whole area here would be the summation of consumer surplus. If you go back to the previous graph, you'll see what I mean. And so here, what this diagram, I'm trying to get through this here. What this diagram is showing us is that how do we determine consumer demand? Well, the way we do it is we derive demand for consumer A, and then we derive the demand for consumer B, and then we derive demand for consumer C, and we derive demand for consumer D. A, B, and C, and D is market demand. Well, how do we derive the demand curve for the market? Well, we summed up the demand curves of the individuals. You know, we had person A, person B, person C, and we added these up horizontally, and we got market demand, which is what D shows us. Market demand and consumer surplus, and again, you know, this is showing us that consumer surplus here again. If we say the price were $3, then that's where supply would intersect, and then and so consumer surplus would only be that area above, but not below. That's what this is showing us. Okay, what does time have to do with margin utility? People have a greater margin utility the shorter the time. Why do people spend more money for an airplane ticket to California rather than taking the bus? And convenient and less time, right? You can get there quicker by a plane than you do by a bus. So are you willing to pay more money for the air ticket as opposed to the bus ticket? Yes, why? Because time is a factor. Time has a lot to do with margin utility. What is an example of time margin utility? Again, this is I got ahead of myself. And this is the end. Wow, how about that? Sweet, huh? So I did get through this chapter. And so what are y'all going to do for next time?
Read the next chapter.
Yeah, read the next chapter. It'd be chapter 7. Now...